Arshamishpatim has a tremendous amount of laws that are connected with Hilchos Nezikin, laws of damages. Toward the end of the parasha, we speak about the Shlosh Regalim, the three festivals. And it's at the end of this section of the three festivals that the Chumash tells us three times during the year. This is Perek of Gimel, chapter 23, verse 17. Shall all your menfolk appear before the Lord Hashem? Ye shall not offer the blood of my feast offering upon leavened bread, nor may the fat of my festive offering remain overnight until morning. And here, this is Pasuk Yotet, verse 19, the one we'll deal with in Mirtz Hashem today. The choicest fruit, the reishit b'korei atmatcha, the choicest first fruit of your land, you shall bring to the house of Hashem your God. V'lo tevashel gdi b'chalev imo. You shall not cook a kid in the milk of its mother. So we have two parts of the pasuk. We have the reishi, the choicest amount you should bring, and we know in source 2, this is referring to the Shiva Saminim, the seven species. And then the second part of the pasuk is, lo tevashel gdi b'chalev imo, you shall not cook a kid in its mother's milk. This prohibition is found three times in the Chumash to teach us, our rabbis learn you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to cook it, and you're not allowed to gain benefit from it. So, right off the bat, the question that we have to ask ourselves is, what is the, and we don't know, obviously, it's, Kodesh Baruch Hu puts us here, but whatever we can gain and glean, perhaps, from the rabbis, what is the mindset between not having milk and meat together, right? You can't have a McDonald's sandwich if McDonald's was kosher of cheese and meat. What is, right? And we're very careful about the laws of Basar B'Challah. After you eat meat, you have to wait 6 hours till you eat milk. Most milk products, you can eat meat shortly afterwards. And that also has to be understood. What is it about the mixture of milk and meat that we have such an extreme separation between the two? What's the mindset? We also have to understand, this is in source 3b, is what do meat and milk have to do with Bikurim? Right? It's not two separate psukim, right? And we have the whole inyan of Bikurim or first fruits in Parsha Ki Tavo. So it's not like teaching us about the first fruits. There's going to be a separate section for that. So clearly there must be some indication of the first fruit having to do with the laws of Basar V'Challah of milk and meat. And if we take a look at the bottom of source number 3a, we'll find out, the Rabbah points out that the first two times that we have this mitzvah of Lo Tevashel Gdi B'Chalev Imo, it's the exact pasuk. Two times it connects it to the right fruits, and the third time it's a similar type of context. So obviously there must be some correlation between the first fruits and not cooking milk and meat. And at first glance, or maybe at second or third glance, I don't really see the connection. We have to understand that connection. So, what is the idea of not cooking milk and meat about? The laws of waiting between milk and meat, meat and milk. We have to understand why is this connected so two out of three times, and even the third, it's connected also with agricultural aspects. Why do we have the first fruits connected with this? What is the connection? And finally, there's a very fascinating medrash that we also have to understand. We know that Parshat Mishpatim deals with as well. The Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Shemayim to get the Torah, Perakaf Dalet. So there's a medrash about when Moshe ascended. This is source number 3, Rabbi Bernstein's book on Shavuot. To receive the Torah, the angel's objective to his doing so, at which point Hashem said to them, how can you lay claim to the Torah? Right, the angel said, hello, Torah belongs up in Shemayim, up in heaven. It doesn't belong down on earth. So Hashem said to them, how can you lay claim to the Torah? Did you not violate one of its laws when you visited Avraham when you ate meat and milk? Upon hearing this, the angels relented and Moshe was able to receive the Torah. Therefore, in celebration of this event, we mark the occasion every year by demonstrating how careful we are between separating milk and meat. What is going on here? What does it mean that the angels ate milk and meat together, and that's the reason we get the Torah? And just as it says in source number 2, even if the angels acted incorrectly on this one occasion, why does this mistake instantly disqualify them from receiving the Torah? The Jewish people also make mistakes. Weiter, we go on. So we need to understand a little bit more deeply what this Medrash is about, that the angels ate the milk and meat together, and that was an opening, so to speak, for us to receive the Torah, where they had no response. So I'd like to try to look at some of these ideas on three levels. We'll say at the outset, the second level is going to really be a journey into the world of Hasidus, into the world of the deeper aspect of Torah. And every once in a while to take this journey is fascinating. And we'll do that today, primarily because food is such an integral part of our diet. So I'd like to start three levels. The first and the third will be a little bit more concrete. The second, as we mentioned, will be a little bit more out there. Okay. Why? What is the mindset of milk and meat? So let's take a look. The Ar Scroll Stone Chumash in source number 4 brings down Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch is very lengthy, so this is a nice synopsis. Rav Hirsch suggests that a reason for the prohibition and for its assertion in this passage, meat represents the animal portion of life, the muscle, the sinew. Milk represents the reproductive capacity of animal life. For milk, it's a nourishment that supports new life. In animals, these two aspects of life are inseparable. Animals instinctively eat and reproduce. Man has a higher calling. He must not mingle these aspects of his nature. To the contrary, he must learn to differentiate between his activities and primarily to subjugate them all to his duty to grow in the service of God and to put godliness into all of his activity. This higher duty is symbolized by the prohibition against mixing milk and meat. Its proximity to the laws of the festival and the first fruit convey the teaching that one who succumbs to his animal instincts destroys the holy nature of the seasons and God's blessing of prosperity. Rav Hirsch at length speaks about the idea that Hashem created in this world that there should be different types of minim, different types of species. And one has to be very careful, like Kilayim, to crossbreed, not to mix things that each have its own place. The animalistic part of the animal, the meat, is one aspect. The milk, the reproductive aspect, is a different aspect. And these represent two different parts, albeit in the animal they are connected. But in the human being, we have to be able to separate both. We have to be able to have self-control. We have to be able to rise above these animalistic urgings. And because we are commanded to rise above and to know its proper place, this is an animal drive. This is a life force that creates life. And they're two separate aspects. Therefore, they can't be mixed together. And that's what brings bracha, blessing, into this world. Let's try to examine this idea of the whole idea of what food is about. That food is about knowing how to make distinctions. Food is about being able to separate that milk and meat aspects and be able to elevate them. Indeed, as Rabbi Tatz has a whole chapter on eating in World Mask, he explains that the soul and the body represent opposite polarities. And their natural state is separation. A special energy is required to keep them together, and this energy is provided by food. The function of food is to maintain the bond between the body and the neshama, to keep the neshama in the body. And therefore we understand why so much of Judaism is surrounded by food. A wedding, a bris, a pidyon haben, a siyum, Shabbos, yantif, because food is not just a physical means of staying alive. Food is a medium which enables the soul-body relationship to stay in sync. Because if you don't eat, you're going to die. So the food isn't, as we'll talk about in Beretz Hashem more in depth on the second level, food isn't just to nourish us physically, it's very much to nourish us spiritually as well. Because food has this quality that enables us to stay alive and enables my neshama, my soul, to stay in my body, which is that combination of body-soul, and food becomes that medium. So I understand that food takes on a whole different aspect when we talk about food than in any other area. Rav Nebenzahl, we've seen this piece before. Rav Nebenzahl in Sefer Vayikra, Parshat Shemini, speaks about, in source number 6, next page, Madua pogad achila isur ba nefesh yoter misurei Torah acherim. There's a far greater consequence when one eats food that one is not allowed to eat than in any other transgression in the Torah. And he says, "Varei mekubalnu shiyasod ze nachon legabei kol averot. Kol averot pogema benefesh ha'adam." True, every sin a person does, lo aleinu, is going to impact the person's nefesh. So the question becomes, so then what is it about eating that takes on a category of its own, that is much more severe? And he says very simply, Elishasiya Saveros, Va'af Bitsua Chamorot Shabahem, the asterisk in 6. When one lo aleinu does a sin, even the worst of the sins, Hinei Chitzoniyut La'adam, they remain external to the person. Haverot Omnam Pogemet B'Nafsho, of course they impact a person, but they don't turn into Chilek Matzmuto in the bowl. They don't turn into part and parcel of who the person is. Lo Kein Achilat Isur, Zu choderet lipnimius ha'adam. This is not true of eating. Eating comes into the life force of the person. It becomes the dam, the blood of a person. Ki adamu ha'nefesh, it becomes the very soul aspect of the person. So let's say a person speaks lashon hara. Let's say a person does something that they shouldn't do. Chalal Shabbos, God forbid, something like that. So obviously it impacts you, but it doesn't enter into and turn into the essence of who you are. When a person eats something that they're not supposed to eat, they don't check for food and they're eating bugs, or they're eating something not kosher, whatever it may be, that then enters into the life force of the person and turns into the person itself. And that is why it has a far greater impact. Where do you see this? Source 7. That's why the halacha says we're in, wherever possible, if at all possible, if a child needs, you know, supplementary milk, to take it from a mother who keeps the laws of kashrus. So, right, and we know, if I know in Eretz Yisrael, I've delivered it, that people will pump milk for babies who need a little bit of extra, right? It's a whole chesed. So here, I delivered it, means it wasn't for me. I was a go-between between people. I'm not a tzaddikus. Af shechalav hochelet mazon sheino kasher mutar mitzadatid. Even though halachically you can eat it, but it's better not to, because again, it goes into the child. And this is based on the Medrash, Peshati L'Daberi Mashchina Yanak Davar Tameh, Gemara and Sota. The mouth that's going to speak to Kadosh Baruch Hu, that mouth should eat something impure. So what does it mean to eat something impure? So he brings down here, and this is very powerful, that Milat Tameh, the word Tameh, which we translate as impure, the Targum Onklus, and the Targum is not just a translation, it's an explanation. The Targum translates Tameh in the bracket in 7 as Satum, to close up, like Sitmum Plishtim, Timnum Plishtaya. Adama Mazeg Begufo Machalim Tmeim. When one has within them unkosher Tameh food, so tein ba'ada or alokim onem menor lachdur lishmatel. This is like such a powerful line. It blocks the godly light from entering into a person to ignite their soul. And this is why we've spoken about that the Sfarim say that a Jew is a maimim b'nei maminim. A Jew always believes. Ah, you find Jews in today's day and age who may not be holding by belief. And they say is that if generation after generation the people have eaten non-kosher, it can erode the genetic DNA, spiritual DNA, to be a maimim, to be a believer. That's the power of eating food that is not kosher. Va'av she'ein davar maybe say tshuva. Of course, nothing stands in the way of tshuva. And obviously, you can do tshuva for this, for sure. It's going to be harder because you're closed up. And that's why a person suddenly, you know, said, I'm not sure where I'm holding, and I'm not on fire, I'm not as inspired. Ask yourself, what have you eaten recently? Who have you eaten with? The food, and we've spoken about the environment, who makes the food, all impacts a person. Mitamtemet libo shel adam. It corrupts, that's the best word. It corrupts the life force of a person. And the reason is very clear. We all know enough about biology, digestive system, that the food that we eat turns into, you know, all the nutrients that we need are taken out of the food and enters into the bloodstream of a person, and it nourishes this person. And again, as we spoke about, it's a mind, it's a body-soul relationship. It doesn't just nourish us physically, that I have the energy to teach, I have the energy to walk or do anything. It also nourishes me spiritually, because if I didn't eat, I wouldn't be able to have my soul stay in my body. So the food that I eat is doing two things simultaneously. It is nourishing me physically and spiritually, and therefore, we are what we eat. We have to be careful what we eat, because what we eat is going to impact me on my spiritual level. With this in mind, my friends, we can appreciate why eating basar b'chalav, why eating milk and meat, aside from the fact that it is mixing two different realms together, which impacts who I am, just the physical act of eating milk and meat, the Sfarim break down Chaya Moshe, she is soda isur hi shalolu vashoak di yachrim sibaki dulo mechayeuto, she ish makach mita nachzarius. This is cruelty. You take a little animal and you cook it in the milk that's supposed to nourish this animal. I mean, how much greater cruelty can you imagine? This very milk, the chalevi mo, the milk of his mother, the very milk that this little animal is sustained on, that's the milk that's going to be boiled in? That's the milk that's going to kill it? That's achzarios. That's cruelty. You eat that combination, you are what you eat. You become this type of cruel person. And that's why we're told what we're allowed to eat and what we're not allowed to eat. Animals that are eat other animals, we're not allowed to eat because it's going to impact who we are. Similar to this, Rabbeinu Bechaya brings down, as well as other Mefarshim in source number 9, another explanation. Why is it that eating milk and meat together is metamte metalev? We're talking about mamish, not eating it one after the other, or together. Why is it metamte metalev? Because milk, we know, is made originally from the blood. The blood turns into, like a biology share today, my friends, Vadam Mizgora Umolit Achzarios. Blood, we know, you're not allowed to eat, because it has that aspect of Achzarios, of cruelty. The blood, which is fascinating in its own right, turns into milk. Now, what happens when I cook this milk and with the meat? So the milk now connects with the meat, and it goes back to, it is drawn back to its original source. When it goes, it's connected with the meat, then harei chozer lekoach adam. It returns back to what it remembers. Hey, I remember you. I was in you. I was originally blood. So that milk now reverts back conceptually to blood. And then it's the mixture of the two together. It's clearly, it's like blood, you know, to the utmost degree, and it breeds in a person achzarios, cruelty, it's metamtem halev, and leads to very bad midos. So on the first level, the idea of eating has to be, bekedusha has to be with holiness, it has to be knowing distinctions, when to eat, how to eat, and know that the food that we eat becomes part and parcel of us, and we have to be careful not to bring in the blood force. We can't bring in an aspect of achzarios, of cruelty within us, because it turns us into cruel people. Going back to Rav Hirsch, the idea that eating, separating milk and meat, is about being able to have a time and a place for everything, is the flip side of the eating, and that is, eating doesn't just staying away from certain things. eating also elevates a person. And that is in source number 10, continues Rav Neben Zal. Umuvan shekol mitzvot alot ha'asein nishmar dam ha'chalei yisur, ein pe rush ha'davar sherek lo ishchid ha'davsho, ki im noledet bo ma'ala ruchanit b'shel amidato b'tzav ha'tara. A person who holds by the laws of kashrut becomes an exalted being. Why? Because all of these, and there's so many laws connected to food, many of them are about kibush hayetzer. You have to overcome your inclination. You can't act like an animal. You can't act impulsively. You can't eat everything you see. There has to be a risun atzmi. There has to be some level of self-control. That's what our verse was talking about. The animal part and the reproductive milk part have to be separated. You can't be an animal. You're a person. The separation of milk and meat reminds a person how we have to elevate the eating experience. And indeed, if you take a look at the eating experience, and Rav Neben Zal continues with this in source number 10, and you never really think about it until you start thinking about it, and then you think about it and you say, oh my gosh, I've never thought about it. And that is, there's so much thinking that goes into eating. So first of all, you have to make sure the food is kosher. Second of all, you have to make sure that the food doesn't have any bugs in it, or, you know, and that you've cleaned it and washed it and prepared it correctly. Okay, after you've done all of that, then you have to ask yourself, well, am I able to eat it now? Is it milk? Is it meat? Do I have to wait between milk and meat? Is it, you know, before Kiddush on Shabbos morning? Is it, and you have to ask yourself all these questions. And then you have to say, well, where am I supposed to eat it? Am I supposed to eat it in a sukkah? Am I supposed to eat it sitting down? Am I supposed to, if I'm going to eat it from one room to another room, well, can I do that? Am I allowed to walk out to get the mail in between? Oh my gosh, there's so many questions. Then what bracha do I say on it? Well, if it's a mixture, then what bracha do I say on it? Do I have to take so many different foods to be able to be motzi every type of food that you can imagine? And then you finally say, okay, now I'm ready to sit down. Well, hold on a second. I have to wash my hands maybe for the tzedakah. This is it. This is an elevating experience because I'm not an animal. I'm able to go through the process whether we think about it or not. And I'm able to say, I'll wait. I'll wait till Havdalah. You know, sometimes my husband comes home 3 or 4 hours after Shabbos. So, okay, we're able to, you know, clean up and do malacha, right? We've said Mariv. But we can't eat. So it's not like you can eat whenever you want to eat. You have to wait. And this is what builds a person. And he says, Zoi efo achad ha-matarot ha-gluyot sh'marechet zivuy ha-torah sh'kodem achila l'romemet adam me'al yitzro. And the asterisk in 11. Kach shuchal l'chavno l'afikim bruchim. So food isn't just what I take in. The whole process of food elevates a person to the highest of levels and makes a person into a person who is a person and not an animal. And he summarizes this so beautifully in source number 12. There are many different levels, making sure I don't go over something that's usher from the Torah. I also have to be careful about the gzeiras chachamim and the fences that they created. And I also have to realize that everything around me has to be of the utmost level of kedusha, of holiness. With this in mind, my friends, that when we say lo sava shokti b'chalev imo, and we, what does that mean? It means that everything has a time and a place, and that the eating experience itself has to be an elevated eating experience. I'm not an animal. I know the right time, the right place, how to eat, what to eat, what do I eat first, what do I eat second. Brachas, all of this makes me who I am, and as Rav Hirsch said, has the ability to then bring bracha onto the crops. Because when we are sensitive to food, and we elevate food, and we use food as a medium of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that then brings down blessing on the crops, blessing on the food, and hence the Bikurim, the first fruit, is able to be brought to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With this, we can appreciate the way Minchas Michal, Rav Bibo, in source number 13, explains this medrash by the Malachim. He says, when these angels came to the house of Avram Avinu, and they saw the exemplary way that Avraham Avinu was acting in this mita of chesed, above the, you know, above and beyond normal human beings, they too went above and beyond their normal behavior, and they ate. Why? Because when they saw the greatness of Avraham Avinu, they said, how could we be a greater tzaddik than him? Like, you're going to say, oh, we don't eat your food. No, 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 we don't trust your kashrus. When they saw all the extent that Avraham Avinu went to, they felt it was inappropriate to not eat. However, what's fascinating is that it says, v'hu omed aleihem. Avraham Avinu doesn't eat. He stands and he serves them. And this is the response that Kivyochel HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to the angels. The angels are saying, you can't give food, you can't give Torah down to the people. The people are humans. They're going to take Torah and they're going to abuse it. They can't handle Torah. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, really? Remember how you ate when you were down there? That even angels eat. However, humans didn't eat. That Avraham Avinu had the ability to have self-control. And when you see the greatness of people, that they know how to have self-control, they don't have to eat. There are times that we fast. There are times that we do various things. When we understand the greatness of people, that they have this aspect of self-control, people are very deserving of having the Torah. And this was the lesson. Shegedolim sadikim yoter mimalchei asharet. You see here that righteous people are greater than the malchei asharet. That the angels couldn't help themselves but eat. But Avraham Avinu had the ability of self-control. That is the greatness of human beings. If we were to summarize this section, my friends, I'd just like to add one nekuda, one or two final ideas before we go on this very interesting Kabbalistic journey. And that is a gewaltic insight that Rav Avigdor Miller Zatzal had in Source 15, L'Tzitchal Yom. And he says, Guf ha'adam hu me'ein beis mikdash. A human body is like a miniature beis mikdash. Uvavi mishkan evde. V'chi efshar lachnis kol ma shirotzim l'tocha beit mikdash. Can you put anything you want into the beis mikdash? There's an isser to bring chulin to the azara. You can't bring in shrasim lazara. You can't bring in certain food that are impure into the azara, into the Beitz HaMikdash. Kach yesh leguf kadosh dinim v'alachot lishmo kedushato. A Jewish body is like a Beitz HaMikdash. It's akin to a Beitz HaMikdash. And the Beitz HaMikdash is a place of kedusha. So that's how we have to look at our body. Our body isn't just a place where I eat. My body is a Beitz HaMikdash. And if my body is a Beis HaMikdash, I have to be careful what goes into my body. I have to be careful how it goes in and when it goes in. And all these halachas of no one can just enter into Beis HaMikdash whenever they wanted to. Again, there's yagim, there's fences, there's laws. That's how we have to look at what food is about. So perhaps just to draw all the pieces together, on a practical level, when we talk about that we're Beis HaMikdash, how careful we have to be about food, and we bring it back to the beginning of the Pasuk of Reishi Bikur, the Reishi, the beginning of your Bikurim to bring to Hashem. So the Tiva Torah of Gamliel Rabinowitz has a very beautiful idea. He says, even though we have no Beis HaMikdash today, the Torah is Nitzchit, and a person has to take what they can from every mitzvah in order to be able to Mekayim it. You know, this idea of Bikurim always reminds me of a story which I've shared probably many times. It's one of my favorite. When my older daughter was around 6-7 years old, we planted a Rimon tree, a pomegranate tree, which was a few years old in our garden. And I remember her coming very excited into the house. Ima, Ima, you have to come out. You have to see. We have Rimonim. We have pomegranates on the tree. Okay, pomegranates on the tree. Then she asked me the following question. She says, Ima, should we tie a red string around the pomegranate in case the Beis HaMikdash should be built? We know which are Bikurim, which are first fruit. Right? That's the person living with, you know, reality of Mashiach could be here any minute. Right? Beis HaMikdash could be here. But for most of us who aren't living on the 6-7-year-old level, and how is the Bikurim relevant for our lives? And he says, V'ulai yeshnav sharut l'tayim mitzvah Bikurim b'remez. Perhaps, obviously, we can't bring Bikurim, but we can do it in a hinted type of way. Yikachenu v'yisharenu l'Shabbat. You see something beautiful? Keep it for Shabbos. To bring that which is chashuv, that which is special for you, lifnei Hashem. Because we know Shabbos is kulo kados. That Shabbos is a dugma of Beit HaMikdash. Shabbos is like the Beit HaMikdash. It's a place where Hashem rests. So what you want to do is, you want to take Shekinah Shabbat Kula Kodesh. Shabbos is completely holy. Vafilo chilata shel Shabbos kedoshahi. The eating on Shabbos is a holy experience. Memeilem yichaveda malcham yuchav l'shirel l'shabbat. Therefore, if you take a food and you say, I'm going to keep it for Shabbos, to a certain degree, obviously not halachically, but we're talking about hashkafically, you've been mekayim this mitzvah of havas bikurim, of taking the first, taking the best, taking the precious, taking that which is special for you, and saving it for Hashem, bringing it to the Beit HaMikdash, and here the Beit HaMikdash being Shabbos Kodesh. You know, I thought about this today. It's Thursday night, taping now, and I went shopping today for Shabbos, so I can't say that food is something that I spend a tremendous amount of time consumed with. However, for me, my Shabbos Kodesh food is chap liver and pickles. And for me, that would be a whole Shabbos. I would be that's basically what I eat. It's great. Hodu Lashem. The challenge is to find pickles. The pickles have to be pickles, you know, not pickles. And you're in a pickle if you can't find a pickle. That's a real pickle. So, what do you do? So, somebody just mentioned that there's a new store that just opened that has pickles that are an echo of Gus's Pickles in Lower East Side. If any of you remember those Gus's Pickles, you can almost smell the Gus's Pickles, right? I mean, not that I'm consumed by these pickles, but okay. So, I went to the store today, and I bought these pickles. So part of me was thinking, well, let me try the pickles before Shabbos. And then I remembered this piece, and I said, no. These pickles were bought l'chvot Shabbos Kodesh. If they're bought l'chvot Shabbos Kodesh, then the reishi bikurei admatcha, what does it mean? Bikurim, you take those pickles, you put them in the fridge, and you say they're in honor of Shabbos, and Friday night you eat the pickles. Because that is something special for Shabbos. And that brings us back full circle to what we're speaking about of self-control. You don't eat whenever you want to eat, whatever you want to eat, however you want to eat it. This is what makes us special. That's lo tevashel di b'chalev imo. We don't have that dam. We don't have that blood force, that tumah, that satum, that closes us up. That we don't have that spiritual drive, that spiritual connection. We have the ability, l'rafsein, to hold back our desires, to hold back what we want. That's idea number one of lo tevashel di b'chalev imo. Whether it's about being able to separate the animalistic part and the reproductive parts, that we have the ability to have everything in its proper place, that to cook a kid in its mother's milk is cruelty at its height. It returns back to the blood force that the milk is originally there as blood, and it's cruelty to the nth degree, and we have to be careful. A, what we eat that makes us who we are, and our ability to hold back from eating, our ability to have distinctions, is what elevates us in our avodas Hashem. That's idea one. Idea number two is we're going to just take a little bit of a tour. Hold on tight. And hopefully we're not going to get too lost. It's very fascinating, very Kabbalistic. Why am I bringing it? Because it's on the Kabbalistic level, very practical for our lives, Kabbalistically. Source 17. He asked our question, what does Bikurim have to do with the prohibition of eating milk and meat? Secondly, what is the divine rationale underlying this prohibition? So he says the truth. Rabbeinu Bechai says it's a chok. It's a law we don't understand. Okay, so now I understand. It's a law we don't understand. So now let's try to understand what we don't understand. You understand? Good. So he begins with the Shlach Kadosh, who brings down the name of the divine Kabbalist from Menachem Rikanti. Regarding the reason for the prohibition to eat meat and milk. And he says the following. He explains that meat, which is red, represents din, divine justice, whereas milk, which is white, represents rachamim, divine mercy. Hence, it's improper to mix the two. And I think this is a very powerful idea, that there is this separation between din and rachamim, strict justice and mercy. Apropos the subject, we find illuminating words in the Ben Ish Chai, where he says, aside from mentioning the Kabbalistic distinction that meat represents din and milk represents chesed, divine kindness and favor, he goes on to explain why it's prohibited to consume meat until after it's been properly slaughtered. Therefore, meat can be eaten and rectified after it has been slaughtered, and the reason is very simple. And this goes into 19 and 20, that we know that there are different levels in the world. There's the lowest level, which is the domain, the inanimate. Then there is the tzomeach, the level of the vegetative world. Then there's the chai, the animal kingdom. And then there's the medaber, the human kingdom. In each one of these kingdoms, there are what we call nitzotzos hakedusha. There are sparks of holiness. Now, what does that mean? I can't explain it to you. In simple terms, it means that everything that's created has a divine energy in it. Now, what happens is, in the food chain, is that when an animal, when a plant life takes in from the grass, when it takes in from the environment around it, and the animal, when it eats the grass and the vegetative plants, each one assimilates these different sparks into its being. So we find in Source 20 that Hashem created the universe such that each category in this hierarchy derives its nourishment from the category below it. The plants and vegetation receive nourishment from the soil of the earth, the domain. Thus the sparks and elements of the animate matter are incorporated into the tzomeach, become inseparable from it. As a result, the holy sparks originating from the inanimate category elevate and become part of the plant. Then the animals feed off of this, and then it becomes an inseparable part of that. And then finally, when a person eats, and the animals shecht it correctly, and you say a bracha, and you utilize this food to be able to serve God, you've now elevated all the sparks in the entire system for the service of God. And that's why eating is such a very powerful experience. And that's why Ein Suda Elu Basar B'Yayim, I'm not getting into vegetarianism here, that's all separate discussion, but a Suda, a Bris Mila, a Pidyon HaBen, a wedding, a Suda has usually meat, right? Usually has meat in it, right? Why? Again, the idea is that the meat is something that has assimilated all the other elements, and now it's as if I'm at this Suda, at this very special time, it's the time of a mitzvah, I am elevating the entire world to be able to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, with this we can appreciate the Beit Chai in 21 asserts that meat represents din. It cannot be eaten and rectified as simply and easily as milk and other foodstuffs. So, to drink some milk, so you're rectifying some aspect, but you can't compare drinking the milk to actually consuming the animal, and we'll talk about this. Let's just take this a little bit further, and then we'll go a little bit deeper, and then we'll be out of here. Why do we wait 6 hours between milk and meat after eating meat before eating milk? So there's a dispute in the Gemara concerning something 22b, forbidden, and we're not talking halachically here, and hot, conceptually. Something forbidden and hot falls into something permitted and cold. So you have a hot piece of chicken that fell into, cereal or milk. Or vice versa, something forbidden and cold that falls into something permitted and hot. So Rav says that the upper one prevails. The component on top dominates and governs the status of the bottom component. Hence, if the top component is hot, it heats up the bottom component and both are prohibited. Okay, that makes sense. Shmuel, on the other hand, says no. The status of the upper... The bottom one prevails. It determines the status of the upper component. So if there's cold milk, that's then going to cool down the hot piece of chicken, and the status is going to be whatever it's going to be. So do I go based on what falls from the top, which is hot, or do I go based on the bottom? What is the determining factor, top or bottom? And we paskin like Shmuel, it's based on the bottom. So therefore, in 23, if one ate dairy first, signifying, and dairy we said is chesed, milk is kindness, so chesed entered first. So then he's permitted to eat meat afterwards before the first has been digested, since the bottom one prevails. And the bottom one is chesed. So the chesed overtakes the din, so it's okay that I put meat into a body right after I ate milk. Why? Or, you know, with some break in between. Because the chesed, the kindness, is going to be miskaber, overcome the meat. On the other hand, if one ate meat first, signifying that the elements of severity and din entered first, then it's not permissible to eat dairy a short time afterwards, so that the forces of din, of judgment, will not prevail. Instead, one should wait until the meat is digested, 6 hours, then the power of the forces of din will be eliminated, and then it's permissible to eat dairy. So now we can appreciate, we'll do it outside, the Star of Shalom of Bells in 24 and 25. Now we can appreciate the Medrash. And there was a very famous question on the Medrash of the Malachim, ate basar b'chalav. Hold on a second. If you take a look at the Pasuk, it says that Aaron Ravina first fed them chema'ah, first fed them butter, and then he fed them meat. So they didn't eat milk and meat together. They first ate milk, and then they ate meat, and that's not a problem. Whoa! You're right, for us that's not a problem. But for the angels who look at that they are above, because they reside in the heavens, so therefore they follow the opinion of Rav that the top dictates. Well, if the top dictates, so that if I eat milk, which is chesed, and then meat, milk, which is chesed, and then meat, which is din, coming from the perspective of angels where the top dominates, so then the meat has dominated the milk, and from that perspective, it's been overcome with din, with justice, and therefore cannot be eaten together. So for our perspective of humans coming down here, and that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu answered, he says, you guys have the problem, because you're looking at it from the perspective of what's important is coming from above. You're the angels. Well, then you ate milk and meat together, because you had first and milk and then meat, and meat overrides the milk. But from the Jewish people's point of view, where everything goes by the bottom, so first they had the milk and then the meat on top, the chesed overcomes the din. But then he asks the question in source 26, I'm trying to get through this as quickly as we can. Look, let's add one more component in 29. This idea of elevation, of elevating the sparks, and that's what the meat does. It's elevating all the whole process. This idea of elevation is what the Reshit of the Truma is about, what Bikurim is about, all of these gifts that are given to the priests. It's about taking from the one portion, elevating it to giving by giving to the priest. When the priest eats it, he elevates by consuming this in holiness. Not only is this piece, this fruit, these Bikurim elevated, but he brings with it the entire crop as well. It becomes elevated as well. And again, all these tikkun, all of these rectification of all these sparks are elevated. Now, he asks a very obvious question in 26 and 27. Well, hold on a second. If we're trying to say that this whole process is an elevation process, and we're also saying that the meat represents the din, the judgment, and the milk represents the rachamim, the chesed, well, aren't we really into having din and rachamim work together? Like, didn't Hashem originally create the world, b'midas ha-din, and he saw it wasn't going to last, then he added rachamim. So if I cared, it would make more sense to have the milk and meat eating together so that I can be able to mitigate the din, the judgment, with milk, with rachamim. And he answers by saying, adding one final component in 31, and he says the following. Originally, when Hashem created the world, we weren't supposed to be eating meat. And how are we going to elevate all these sparks? We were going to do it by drinking the milk. By drinking the milk and eating milk products, that was going to elevate all the sparks. It was only after sinning with the sin of Chet Eitz Hadad, and then ultimately in the sin of the time of Noah, that we were allowed to eat animals. So animals, the fact that we are elevating creating all of this process through eating the animal, that itself is din. That's judgment. We should be able to do that in the perfect world. And that's why by Mamet Har Sinai, they weren't allowed to eat. That's why we eat milchets. They weren't really allowed to eat meat anymore. They went back to the level of Adam Arishon before the sin. They were on that level where you could elevate all the sparks, which means bring all of humanity back to God with just by eating milk products. So when one eats meat, one has to understand one is involved in a world of din, world of justice, and that world of justice is a reminder to us that we fell in the sin of Chet Hadat. Because if we didn't fall, then we would never have had the Chet of the Dorah Mabo, and we would never have meat. So just like on Shabbos, we cover the challahs in order not to embarrass it, we do the same thing here, so to speak. We make a separation between the milk and the meat. It is only here, with regards to eating milk and meat together, the bracket in 31, that their combination causes amplification of the din, because when we consume dairy products, we're only rectifying your sparks of Kedusha. This arouses the force of din, because originally consuming dairy products provided tikkun and elevation for the say Kedusha of the meat. That should have been it. The chet, however, altered the situation. After the sin, it became necessary to slaughter the animal. Therefore, Hashem prohibited us from eating basar b'chalav. They must be eaten separately, so that the meat will not be embarrassed by the fact that it could have been rectified by the consumption of dairy products. The meat comes along and says, "Hey, look how much I am elevating." And the milk turns to him and says, "Hell, really? If you hadn't sinned, we wouldn't need you. Just move out of the way. Din is not what we're looking for. We're looking for rachamim. Din is only secondary." So to remind us of this tension almost, we say to the milk and meat, you know what, stay far apart from each other. And allow the din to rest as din, and then to be able to bring in chesed, to elevate the sparks. Tying this all together, the underlying rationales for both mitzvahs are similar. As the Yitzmach Moshe taught, Hashem commanded us to bring the Bikurim to Beis HaMikdash, the Nitzutze Kedusha, the heavenly sparks in the Bikurim, and all the grain would be rectified by eating by the Kohanim. Similarly, it's prohibited to eat meat and milk, because it could have been possible to rectify the sparks of holiness in the meat also by consuming the milk and dairy products. Eating them together, however, arouses the force of din. We'll just add parenthetically, Mesameach Zion in 33, the whole idea of bringing Bikurim in the Kabbalistic works is a tikkun of Chet Adam HaRishon. So really, what do both of these have in common? The two parts of the Pasuk, they have in common that this is the rectification of Adam HaRishon, of Nitzutzei Kedusha, of the holiness sparks. So just like bringing Bikurim creates this elevation of the sparks and is a tikkun rectification of the sin of Adam, how so? We've discussed in previous Shavuot Shirim. Likewise, separating the milk and meat also is a tikkun of the Chet Eitz Hadat in a way that the meat is din and the milk products are rachabim. Okay, let's do the third level, which is a little bit easier, so if you're with me, what should we have gotten out from the second level? Just keep in mind that there is an idea that when we eat, we elevate that which we are eating. Have this in mind when we eat a Shabbos meal, we eat meat, that I'm elevating it to be able to, anytime we eat, to serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And that this is really a compensation for man, that really all of these sparks should have been lifted up just by eating milchitz, which is one of the reasons we eat milchitz on Shavuos, to remind us of this higher elevated level. Okay, the final idea. Let's begin with Ben Melech El HaTorah. He brings down in 34... there was a custom in those days, and this is very much the Rambam who says, why can't you eat milk and meat together? Because that was the Avodah Zarah, that was the idolatry at that time. What was the idolatry at that time? Listen very carefully. When you take the meat and you cook it in its mother, what you're basically saying is that this mother... let's do it inside. V'lchein him nagu levashel. They used to, this was their custom, to cook for their avodah zarah, the the gdi, the goat, in its mother's milk, in the thing which it raised it, shuchalav imo mechayeoto, lomar, to teach it, in the arrow. Shekeshem shechalav hu megadel tagdi. This is symbolism in the Avodah Zarah, that just like the milk is what enables the goat to grow, gam nitbashel v'naseh ra'ui l'achila, and this is what's going to enable it to be eaten. Likewise, our God is the one that gives us everything we need. Just like the milk enables the little goat to grow, and now it enables the goat to be eaten, so too our God gives us and sustains us in everything we need. Therefore, 35, Omnam aleinu siftat Torah levateka razu shekol anim salanu meit Hashem. We are told, no, know that everything that you have comes from Hashem. Reshipi koreat matchat avi beit Hashem lokecha. Make sure that you bring everything to Hashem. And we cannot follow the ways of the goyim by doing what they did of putting the goat in its mother's milk. By not doing that, by desisting, we are separating ourselves from idolatry. Why the beginning of the pasuk, Reshipi koreat matchat? To teach you that what should we do is to recognize where is the source of all of our sustenance, and that source comes from Hashem. And this explains, he says, the Ben Melech Rav Mintzberg, why the Medrash says, and the Mechilta Rabbi Yishmael says, that the three times that there is a commandment not to eat milk, mother, the meat in its mother's milk, corresponds to the three covenants that were made between Hashem and Klal Yisrael, one in Chorev, one in Arvas Moav, and one in Har Grizim and Har Eval, because what this is really about is a recognition of where our source of sustenance comes from. And we know the whole idea of Bikurim through the prism of Torah, Rabbi Roberts. When a person has worked long hours preparing the ground and then sowing the crops, his joy at their appearance is immense. But instead of keeping them for his own pleasure, 36 in the asterisk, he takes them to the base of Migdash and donates them, so to speak, to the Almighty. By doing so, he acknowledges that without divine help, there would not be any fruit. Hashem created the soil, he provided the rain, he gave the farmer the physical strength. Everything comes from Hashem. This is an attribute of self-effacement. Now we can appreciate, going back to Roy Bernstein's Sefer, the Ralbag explains in 37, the mitzvah of Bikurim addresses something that can either strengthen a person's connection with Hashem or loosen it, namely Hashem running the world through the laws of nature. If a person recognizes Hashem as the force behind natural law that can serve to further enhance his appreciation of Hashem's power and wisdom, which will bring him closer to Him. However, the very same laws of nature can be the cause of a person distancing himself from Hashem by refusing to recognize Him as the one who controls them. The mitzvah, which helps to ensure that a person reacts to natural law in a positive way, is Bikurim. Continuing in this vein, the verse concludes by saying, do not cook a kid in its mother's milk. With these words, in the bracket in 37, the Torah is expressing the antithesis of Bikurim. A mother's milk is meant to bestow life to her young, to take that very life-giving entity and use it as part of the process that accompanies the kid's demise, and it's an abomination of the highest order. This is the connection between the two parts of the pasuk. For in a sense, when a person fails to bring Bikurim, he is also cooking a kid in its mother's milk. He's taking the laws of nature that should be promoting and enhancing his spiritual life, and instead, he's terminating them. And that, my friends, he says, is perhaps what the Medrash means. What the Medrash is saying is Malachim, who we know can only do one job at a time, when the Malachim come down into this world, they're completely physical. And that, perhaps the reason for the angels' failure in this regard, is that angels, by their makeup, entirely dedicated to one thing. However, when an angel assumes physical form and attains physical drives, that very singularity can direct it toward a singular pursuit of physical goals. In that situation, there's no additional facet that can exert its influence and override the physical tendencies. Man, however, is different. He can be able to recognize his physical drives. He can be able to recognize where things come from. He's capable of going beyond what he sees in front of him. Thus, when Hashem disqualified the angels from withholding the Torah from man based on eating milk and meat, it was not only a reference to this isolated incident. It was saying is that the core distinction between their experience and physical life is blurred. They don't understand what it means to be involved in the physical world and elevate it. They don't have an understanding of being able to realize where things come from. They're going to get consumed in the physicality because they are singular in their mission. A Jew has the ability to enjoy this world and at the same moment, after working hard and planting and being involved, at the same moment of saying, wow, have I worked hard for this orange? Thank you, Hashem, Baruch Hu. Being able to acknowledge the source of where this is coming from. And this is really the essence of the contrary to Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is about there is the nature, so to speak, that has produced what it gives you. We recognize there's no such thing as nature in a vacuum. Nature is what we call the constant miracles of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Give the first fruit. The first fruit enables us to recognize the source, which is the antithesis of what the Avodah Zarah is about, that nature is what is in control. Obviously, my friends, this is so fundamental for our lives, that we have to recognize in all areas of our lives that the Kadosh Baruch Hu who's providing for us. Which leads us to the Chayim Moshe in 39 and through 41b, very beautiful Chayim Moshe. He says there are two times where we are commanded about eating. One is when Adam is told to eat of the Hinena Tati Lachem Kol Esev et Kol Ha'etz Asher Bo Pri Eitz in 39 in the double squiggly. Eat of all the vegetative part of the land and that which grows on the fruit of the tree. And the second time is about Noah, that you can eat of the animals that walk on this ground. So now you see both of the parts of this pasuk are a message to man. When I told Adam to be able to enjoy the fruit of the field, know that all of those fruits of the field come from me. Reishi b'kareat matcha tavi b'ed Hashem lokecha. Take those first fruits and bring them to Hashem. Ah, and when I told v'chein in the arrow in 41a, kishikavak Hashem Baruch Hu mazono shel Noach, and he allowed Noach to eat of the parts sar balei chayim, he says, you know what? In that very same section, it was talking about how you can't take the life force of other people. And you can't murder, and you can't be mean. Shezeh yisod gadol b'darchei hasagat mezonos la'adam. And this is very much connected to the eating of a person. Because sometimes in 41b, when a person wants to get ahead in life, and a person wants to, you know, be on the front lines in their work, it's a cutthroat life, and it's a dog-eat-dog world. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Lo tevashel di b'chalev imo. Know that you can't take that milk, which is what sustains that animal, and use it in an achzari type of way, in a cruel type of way. Yes, you can eat animals. Yes, you're going to be sustained by working hard, but you can never do it in a way of cruelty. King Shnei Karim and the asterisk of 41b, these are two ideas. Shal Adam leaves a hair behem, that a person has to be careful when he's involved in making a living. Michad, on the one hand, lachrop b'libo, to really emphasize shekol mashe yeshlo ma'et Hashem, is coming from God. That's the bikurim. Two, v'shelo yelech achar shrirut libo b'chol tanugei olam hazeh. And two is, be careful that when you go looking for a parnasa, don't lose your rachamim, don't lose your mercy, don't lose being a mensch. Money is not worth your menschlichkeit, and be able to be deal with people in a menschlichkeit way. Both parts of the pasuk are referring to how we gain parnasa. I'd like to end in the 2 minutes that we have a very beautiful piece, again, on a more of a drash, so type of level. The Tasha Revi in Avodat Avodah points out that based on the Zohar HaKadosh, on the Pasuk Lo Tevashel Gdi B'Chalev Imo, he says that that this is a reference to the Gdi represents the outer forces of the Klipa, of the negative forces. Don't allow those negative forces to be able to take the aim, to take over Knesset Yisrael, to take over the Jewish people. Don't allow the negative forces to have a hold on who you are. How do you make sure that they don't? Reshi Bikurei Admatcha, give the Reshi to Hashem. And he speaks about so beautifully in 42 through 44. The Reshi is how you wake up in the morning. That the first thought that you have in the morning should be dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Hashem brought you back to life. That you're able to function in this world. And with that in 43, Yikabel Alav O Malchut Shamayim, that you'll be able to have Hashem over you, to be Mamlich on the Neshama Kedosha that Hashem has given you. Reshit Bikurei Admatcha, Hainu Reshit Machshavotcha Baboker, when you wake up in the morning, the first thought, Tavi Beit Hashem Elokecha, think about Kedusha. And in that way, you're not going to allow the negative forces to even have a hold on you. Because as we spoke about, that when you bring the Bikurim, it doesn't only affect the Tah, it doesn't only affect that which you bring. It affects the entire produce is elevated. All of them, the sparks of holiness are elevated. If we have the ability to elevate the first moment of our waking moment, then it doesn't only affect our waking moment, it has the effect that it takes the Kula Bartaresha Garir. The entire day in 44 in the asterisk is dragged along with that initial thought. And hence, Rav Pink is very beautiful. And it's Nefesh Shimshon on Tefillah in 45 says, the first word in the morning when we wake up is Mode, not Ani. Because when we wake up in the morning, first thing we think of, oh no, I have to get up already? It's time? Oh no, let me put on snooze. And it's all about me. Am I going to have a good day today? What's the weather like? What am I going to wear? Who am I going to meet? It's me, me. Your first word out of your mouth can't be me. Modeh. Modeh isn't only to give thanks, says Rav Pinkus, it's to admit. Hashem, first word out of my mouth is admit I need you. I can't manage my day without you. Every single thing I do, say, think, whatever it is because you're enabling me to do this. That's Bikurim. That's bringing our Bikurim on a practical level. So my friends, how do we be able to take the Bikurim into our lives? First, we save those pickles for Shabbos. Two, we recognize that when I elevate one aspect, everything that is connected to that aspect is elevated with it. In particular, three, when I wake up in the morning and I first thing out of my mouth is, Moda ani lefanecha shechet right. When I wake up with that feeling, it's Hashem, it's about you. I give over Reshi Bikurei Admatcha, I give it over to Beit Hashem, my mind is in Kedusha. Then, that I'm not worried that Gdi, that outer forces, is going to affect the Chalevimo, the Knesset Yisrael, the holiness that's within me. So my friends, as we are careful between basar and chalav, between milk and meat, know that it affects us, we are what we eat. Note that it's din and rachamim and the two have to be separated. And realize, my friends, that the eating process is a process of elevation. The eating process is a process that makes us who we are and why we are who we are. And recognize that the eating process is all about recognizing that everything that I have, everything I eat, everything I accomplish, everything about me is this body-soul relationship, and it's not coming from me. It's all a gift from Hashem. The Lo Tevash Shabdi B'Chalev Imo reminds me, you know what? Don't think that the source is the mother's milk. No, the source is the Ribono Shel Olam, who's granted us all of these gifts. And with that sensitivity, we have the ability to indeed elevate all the sparks.